Let's Talk Family Enterprise explores global ideas, concepts, and models that help family enterprise advisors better serve their family clients. Brought to you by Family Enterprise Canada. All views, information, and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Family Enterprise Canada.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Family Enterprise podcast. My name is Ruth Steberlink, and I am delighted to once again be your host. Today is a very special day for all of us on this podcast. Joining me from Aspen, Colorado, is someone who I would define as quite simply industry-changing, someone who redefined how advisors approach their work with enterprising families and how families themselves think about what wealth means, what legacy means, what multi-generational means. His work has introduced us to the industry-changing idea that wealth, which was previously only thought about in the context of material abundance, is not just about material things, about money and possessions. And actually, for those families truly seeking full-hearted prosperity, there are other capital accounts other than financial that they need to be investing in. He introduced us to the idea of these five capital accounts that I think many of our listeners on this podcast today are very familiar with: the human account, the intellectual, the social, the legacy, as well as the financial. And by redefining wealth, he revolutionized our field and the field of wealth management. So not only is our guest a true pioneer in our space, he is also the author of the seminal works that I would say have radically influenced not just families, but also advisors who serve those families in groundbreaking ways. Books that all of us are familiar with: Family Wealth, Keeping It in the Family, and its successor volume, Complete Family Wealth. Family, The Compact Among Generations, The Cycle of the Gift, The Voice of the Rising Generation, the recent one, Family Trusts. And a little bird told me that I think there's another book in the works, but we'll maybe find out a little bit about that in our conversation. And just a side note for many of you listening today who have listened before and are familiar with our podcast, you know that we ask all our guests at the end of the podcast, what is a book that has really influenced your approach to this work? Well, we now have to caveat that ask by saying you can pretty much say any book, but you can't say one written by our guests because they've been said so many times, as everyone who does meaningful work in this space has been so significantly impacted and influenced by our guest's work. So who am I talking about? Well, of course, I am talking about none other than Mr. James E. Hughes, who, known to many of us as Jay. So Jay, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Ruth, what a pleasure and privilege this is. I always look forward with tremendous enthusiasm to the chance to be in conversation with you, and I'm looking forward to being in conversation with all of our wonderful listeners. So thank you all so much for the privilege of joining you today.
So Jay, there are so many avenues that I would have loved to have gone down with you today, but you are here joining us on this podcast for one very special reason, and that is to talk about and to share with our listeners and people across the globe that listen to this podcast about another amazing and important contribution that you're making to our field, your foundation, the James E. Hughes Jr. Foundation, known colloquially as JEHJF, I believe. So let's get started, Jay. Maybe you can share with us and with the listeners a little bit about this foundation, what it's about, what its genesis was, how it came about being.
Ruth, I was going down to dinner to have my cocktail and have dinner when, to my complete amazement, three very dear friends and some other very dear friends completely and totally without my awareness, had created a foundation with my name. I sat in disbelief, looking at a video that they had made to introduce the foundation to me and to many other people. And when it was done, I was in tears. I thought, what a remarkable thing. And I asked them for two things. If they would change, I said, first, will you take my name off of it? And before I could get the words out of my mouth, the person who was leading the conversation said, oh, and one thing, you can't take your name off of it. So then I was about to say the second thing, And he said, oh, and there's one other thing. You can't say that you're not worthy, which is, of course, exactly what I was going to say.
So they preempted both of your thoughts. Yeah.
So I live with this living creature, this foundation that has my name, and I'm always hoping that I'm worthy of it rather than the other way around. What the foundation is all about is really encapsulated in, I would say, two thoughts. The first is that Aristotle, way back in 2,400 years ago, said that a flourishing society can only exist if its building blocks, its foundation itself, are flourishing families. Or, to put it in a different way, a flourishing family is the first building block of a flourishing society. So the effort of the foundation is to work with families to flourish toward the sum of those families being greater than the parts and leading to a flourishing society. I would say the second thing that we are about is the living out of something I wrote in my first book, and that is that in my view, the mission and vision of a family is to enhance the individual journey of happiness of each family member toward the entire family flourishing. Or, as some of my wonderful friends have said, make sure all the family boats rise so the whole family's flotilla is heading in a direction of flourishing. So those are the two basic things that underlie the James E. Hughes Jr. Foundation.
Well, what a beautiful story. You know, I'm obviously very aware of the foundation, but I did not know about the genesis of the foundation. That's a beautiful, beautiful story. So the purpose is to help and support families flourishing, which many of our listeners today are also committed in their work with families to doing. What specifically is the sort of purpose and the mission, I guess, of the foundation? How are you going to support families flourishing specifically?
Well, Ruth, the world that you and I inhabit and other advisors inhabit that are seeking to help the families they serve flourish, and of course the individuals' pursuits of happiness within those families, come from a lineage of profession that is as long as writing. The Four Noble Professions, ministry, high academia, medicine, and law, are functions that have existed in human society as far back as we can study social anthropology and evolutionary psychology. What we're hoping is that we can pick up the greatest ideas in that lineage. It's a long line of professional service, and then forward those ideas out through what I call a system of dissemination to the people that we hope will read them and who may never have had access to them before. And that is true not only in the English-speaking world, but also in the Spanish and Portuguese-speaking areas and in the Chinese-speaking areas. We may go even beyond those, but those are the ones that we're exploring now. And to make it very specific, we are essentially a mini publishing company, not for profit, of course, which gives us tremendous opportunity to reach out to living people and some who have gone, but where we can reach out to their literary executors and republish, sometimes actually publish brand new things, but republish papers, even books, where we're not working on publishing our first book, of books and papers that were not read, but which I believe have enormous power to help families flourish. We have the gift that the various membership organizations around the world are always looking for good material to share with their members. We have the happy reality that in the fourth economic experiment that we're in, electrons to electrons, there's almost no cost in disseminating these papers and books, just electrons to electrons. And we are looking always for more membership organizations that would be interested in receiving this material. And I want to hasten to say, because quite aware of politics and people's necessary economic means of making a living. We want no connection to any of the members directly. We have no list. We have no connection to the members, no connection to their emails. We simply send to an organization, a hidden gem, as we call it, electrons to electrons, and then leave it to them to send it out. And with the result, Ruth, and it's a long answer, I apologize, but I'll shorten it up this way. When we send out one of these papers, we're now reaching between 10 and 12,000 people through these various organs. And I have to just say personally, this is giving me great, great satisfaction, because these are things that have been deeply influential in my thinking and my spiritual development, many of them, and feeling that they could help someone else, but they didn't have access, has always seemed to me a sad reality. And so hopefully, with the help of the fourth economy, we are breaking through that reality.
Wow. So let me just make sure I have understood what you just said. So in a way, you're sort of like the master curation body that says, here, you call them hidden gems, but here are pieces of work that are highly impactful that we want to disseminate through these channels, through these organizations. We're not going to have direct contact with the members of the organizations, but through these channels, these organizations, we're going to disseminate these pieces of work that before may not have been seen or read. Is that what I'm understanding correctly?
That is exactly right, Ruth. You've said it so many fewer words and so much more clearly than I did. That's exactly what we're, one of the things we're
doing. And all in support of families flourishing.
Always in support of family flourishing and individual flourishing.
And Jay, you know, if you roll the clock forward, like, what is the impact that you really hope this foundation that has been, you know, dedicated in your name, which I think is wonderful because of all the contributions you have made to our space and how you've changed our thinking in this space, what is the impact that you would love to see this foundation ultimately having as the years unfold?
Well, Ruth, the human experience of family historically replicates in physics the second law of thermodynamics. And that is that something in the energy body of this universe becomes material. You feel a family coming to life and its enterprise. And then the reality of our universe is that entropy enters the system. And that is, over time, that which becomes material ultimately goes back to energy. Now, that sounds fine, physics, that's the way it works, okay. But the suffering that is involved in that process is very, very severe. I've dedicated my life in this lifetime to try to reduce that suffering. I think it's unnecessary. I think, however, I am not battling with entropy. That's Mother Nature's law. And none of us is going to have an effect on it. But the interesting, really interesting thing from an impact standpoint, Ruth, is that Mother Nature doesn't say when. She just says that a family, when it's Genesis story, two people of affinity who join together, giving up freedom to gain freedom and have children, and the family begins. Mother Nature says, ultimately, the bonds of family will come apart. And by the way, almost always by inertia, by cold, not by heat and fission. But she doesn't say when. Isn't that marvelous? We have free will as to when. So my hope is that the impact of the foundation, as has also been, I hope, the impact of my work in this lifetime, and may I say also, dear colleague, yours, is to give families a clear choice about their priorities. Are they interested in accreting enough energy to slightly increase over what it loses over time and have a fifth and sixth successful generation? Because again, Mother Nature says that eventually entropy, that is the bonds of affinity of that family, will come apart, probably again by cold, not by heat, but she doesn't say when. And I think the marvel of life is we have free will as families as to when. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. And as a lifelong learner myself, and I think many people listening to this podcast, I would imagine, are too, by virtue of the fact that they're listening to the podcast and wanting to learn more. I think the purpose of the foundation to disseminate these impactful materials that could shift thinking will really be in support of alleviating that suffering that you just talked about. And it sounds, Jay, like this foundation is really an extension of the contribution you've already given to this space, that it will perpetuate for many years forward through the vehicle of your foundation.
Ruth, that is my hope. It's also my hope that we extend my father's lifetime, whose name I have. So I name him James E. Hughes Sr., who was a practicing lawyer for 50 years, helping families around the world with these same issues. And if I may say, Ruth, extending back to the humane work of profession, which in the law, the profession from which you and I come, has always been about one thing, not dispute resolution, not advocacy. The purpose of law has always been to help produce a safe, orderly society for human beings to wake up in. My hope is that the foundation will extend my father's work, your work, others in our field who understand that purpose of the advisory side, because that's the lineage from which we spring.
Now, Jay, maybe you can just give us a little taste of the types of works that the foundation will be sharing. I know that a couple have already been disseminated, and maybe just for our listeners who might not be, this might be the first time they've heard about your foundation, maybe just give us an example of the types of works that the foundation has been releasing and disseminating to these member organizations.
Well, Ruth, we've disseminated four so far. I'll simply mention two to give our listeners a flavor. First was by Dennis Jaffe and was his seminal paper on the journey between an acquirer and a native. What does it mean to be an acquirer, or be a genesis story of a life and an enterprise? If I can, taking energy and making it matter, as we were discussing before, making it material. And then what is the journey for the rising generation members, second, third, and fourth generation, who will be living in what we call the native world of families that have had significant financial resources for generations, which, of course, is not the situation of the Genesis generation. I believe that conversation within families is extremely important to understanding how different their experiences will be between those creating financial resources and those seeking to dynamically preserve them. A second paper that I think also would be very interesting for people is by our friend Matthew Wesley, who titles this paper, and this isn't exactly right, but it's good for this, Culture Eats Structure for Breakfast. He took the great work of Peter Drucker that said Culture Eats Strategy for Breakfast and modified it for our field, Culture Eats Structure for Breakfast, by pointing out that so many of us create structures quite thoughtfully to deal with taxes and creditors, but the human beings can't live in the plans. And that is because the purpose or culture, these words are synonymous, was not developed for the people who will live in the plan. This is a brilliant awareness of reality and the reality of human beings who live in the structures with structures that don't have a culture. So Matt says, he's absolutely right, build your culture from the human shared experience of your family, and then develop structures that improve that culture rather than perhaps putting it into entropy.
Jay, I'm familiar with both the authors, and I think many of our listeners will be familiar with the authors too, and with those two papers. And the one thing I would say about both those papers is they stay in my mind. They were papers that I read that stopped me in my tracks, because particularly Matt's paper, because at the time, I was in the early stages of my career as a family enterprise advisor, and I was leading with structure all the time. Like, we need to get the right structures in place. We've got to get the right governance structures in place. And Matt's paper caused me to pause in my tracks and go, hold on, I'm missing something really huge here. And similarly with Dennis's, I would call these papers seminal papers. They really shift our thinking. So that's a taste of what's to come. I'm super excited about what your foundation is disseminating.
And we're always with new organizations, we always send everything we published to date. So we don't start with whatever the most recent one is, although obviously that's the one we're assuming will be immediately exchanged. But we want to make sure that the library or archive, however our listeners prefer to think about it, gets available from day one, regardless of when our relationship begins.
Well, that is just fantastic news. And I'm sure everyone listening is going to be very excited to know that. Is there any way, Jay, that listeners can support the work of the foundation? Are there ways that we can contribute or at least advance the work of the foundation?
Well, Ruth, I'm going to say something to our listeners. I know most are advisors, some family members, of course, and leaders and families, and some advisors who, of course, are family members. Ruth, when I was a very young lawyer, and I was having a conversation with my father about a particular human problem of a family that I was trying to help, he listened very carefully to what I had to say. And then, as I could tell, I was going to hear something very important. And he said, Jay, he said, you know, it sounds as if you're trying to provide the family with knowledge. And I kind of looked at him. I said, well, of course I am. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't think that's what they need from you, my son. He said, I think they need courage. I sat back in my chair, Ruth. I thought, oh, my goodness, he's right. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, do I have the capacity to provide another person, a whole system, with courage? He was so profoundly right. Mm. We earn our bread when we provide courage. It isn't that knowledge isn't useful, but it's fungible. Mm. Courage is the most valuable thing on earth. Because when a family is facing an obstacle, just as each of our families do, each of us do individually as the stages of our lives wind along, at 80, I still have obstacles. What do I find? I find that knowledge is fungible in dealing with those obstacles. But what I really need is someone to stand in with me with that little bit of courage that I need to do what I know I need to do. But I just needed that little bit of courage and sympathy and empathy to get it solved. Mm. So what I would say to our listeners is what they could do to support this work is take into their thoughts the papers we're going to share, look at some of the other books and things in our field, learn, and then ask themselves when they're sitting with that family, their own or one of their client families, do they really need? And what would the James E. Hughes Jr. Foundation suggest they need? Mm. Courage. Mm. And then say, coraggio, as the Italians say, and go to work.
Yeah. It's so true, Jay. This work does take courage. You know, one of the ways that I love to use the types of meaningful and impactful papers that you're Foundation is going to be sharing and disseminating and making sure it's available to a much broader audience is have the family also read it and then be able to talk about it together. And through that discussion, it raises stuff that's relevant to their situation, but it does it in a, sometimes it just does it in a safer way because initially they're talking about a paper, which is external to them. But as the, with these types of papers that your foundation is going to be disseminating, it invites conversations, the courageous types of conversations that they need, the important but often difficult conversations that they need to be having. So that's one of the ways that I love to use pieces of work like those that the foundation will be sharing. Jay, is there anything else about the foundation that I haven't asked about that you feel would be really helpful for the audience to know before we go to our favorite questions that we ask every guest?
Ruth, I would say this. We are on the cusp of starting to try to use a new translation system called DeepL, L for Lawrence, in order to try to disseminate these papers and a number of other works into Spanish and Portuguese initially and Chinese simple characters. This new system that comes out of the fourth economy, like electrons to electrons, we think from what we've been able to learn so far, can produce translations at what I call 85%. Now, that 50% translations are word for word. They're useless. And nobody's going to get 100%. That is, get exactly the ideas that the writer was trying to produce in his or her own language. Mm-hmm. But if we can get translations to 85 to 90%, so the ideas are really accessible, that would be an incredibly useful thing to be able to do for people who want to read in their own languages.
Yes.
I'm mentioning this because in Canada, given the remarkable diaspora of families there from all over the world, this opportunity that we have now because of the new economy to produce language translations, I'm imagining, this is, you know, I'm 80 years old, but I see a great future for this. And the idea that I could help people in their own languages have access to these works gives me a huge amount of joy. So I'm adding that because that's going to be our next major field of endeavor.
Wow, that is, you're right. We're so multicultural here in Canada. And I think it is a barrier when works of this nature are not written in the language that is familiar, particularly to the elder the senior generations of families, can be very difficult. So I think that's absolutely wonderful, Jay. Now, Dave, if people want to sort of explore, do a bit of a deeper dive into the foundation, you have a website, right?
Yes, www.jehjf.org.
The J. E. Hughes Jr. Foundation.org.
Yes, okay, exactly. The letters. First letter of each of the words.
Beautiful.
Dot,
so we will.
.org.
And we will post a link to that with the podcast for our listeners. So, Jay, we can't believe it's already half an hour. I want to be very mindful of your time, and we're just deeply grateful to you for taking the time to speak with us today. We do ask all our guests two questions. The first one is, as I've said many times on this podcast, one of my favorites because it is another form of curation when people that I trust and love and look up to and admire say, this is a book that you have to read, that goes on my bedside table. So what book, Jay, would you say has most influenced, and I know that this is a difficult question because there's so many books, but if there was one that sort of bubbles to the top that has influenced your approach to this field of work, what book would that be?
Ruth, I would say, I hope this will not sound hubristic, Aristotle's two books, one called The Nicomachean Ethics and the second called The Politics.
These wow, we've never had Aristotle as one of our authors, so this is a first.
The reason I select those two from the literally many thousands of books that have influenced me in the second half of my life is that Aristotle begins, and I'll be very quick here, he begins the Nicomachean Ethics as a discussion of human happiness. I would say for Americans, very much including our Canadian cousins, the great question of Thomas Jefferson of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness comes exact right from Aristotle, word for word. I really think that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness as a core set of goals for human life, I just don't think anybody's said it better. And the politics is the place where Aristotle said, a flourishing family is the first building block of a flourishing society. These pursuit of happiness as an individual journey, happiness in a very deep way. He's not talking about silliness. He's talking about the most profound questions of life. And then life in community, family becoming a flourishing family, becoming the first building block of a flourishing society. These are the two fundamental grounds, I think, of our field. And I'm going to then sneak in one just because I think it's so important.
You're allowed 3D because it's you.
John Locke's the second treatise on the great question will of every system of human governance. And by that, I mean just joint decision making. John Locke said, if you want a system of joint decision making to work, it must be grounded in the following principle. I willingly give up freedom to you to help you in the hope, which can only be a hope because I can't know that you will help me. Giving up freedom to gain freedom. Mm. These are the three building blocks, Ruth, of what has been most influential. And where I feel all other books are essentially conversations around those three principles.
Three principles, right. I'm wondering if Amazon has these books. We always do a link to Amazon for people to purchase them. So I'm excited to see whether we can actually get it online. So maybe your foundation will have to disseminate it. The other question that we ask, and this is like you know, as I said in the introduction, I think of all the people I know in this space, you have made the most, sort of biggest impact in the way that advisors approach this work and in the way that families think about their what wealth means for them and what legacy means and what family means and what it means to flourish. So for advisors that are seeking to help families, and that would be most of our audience, most of the people that are listening today, of all the advice that you have, Jay, what is one piece that you might want to leave with our listeners that would help them do better in this work if they heed your words?
Well, Ruth, again, I'm going to take license and offer two, one of which I've already offered earlier in this conversation, and that is to discriminate, even better discern, when the client is seeking knowledge or the much more important question for the advisor, seeking courage. Mm-hmm. What I would say here in closing is that if you commit to helping the families you serve flourish, you give them everything you've got, and hopefully your own family too, then this is work that becomes lonely because it's qualitative. It's incremental. Mm. There's no quantitative measurement because it's an incremental growth through the enhancing of the individual journey of happiness of each member toward the whole family flourishing. So what I would say is, if you're doing this work well, you will be lonely because you will be committed. So find a group of fellows who are also lonely and hang on to them tight and go walk together.
So well said, Jay, because this work is lonely. Yeah. And it's not checking boxes, right? If we're checking boxes, we're not doing the real work. Thank you so much, Jay. Listen, on behalf of everybody who's listening, I just want to extend deep, deep gratitude, not only for joining us today, but also for the contributions you've made to our space and are continuing to do through this amazing vehicle of your foundation. I'm super excited that we're a part of it here in Canada. We will link to your website for the foundation, as well as to the books that you've recommended, Jay. Just huge, huge thank you from my heart. Thank you so much.
I'm very grateful to be in each of your companies. My blessings to you.
Thank you, Jay.
If you enjoyed today's episode, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast app. And don't forget to share this episode with family, friends, and colleagues.